I am a brain hacker, and the majority of the time now, I hack people's brains to create sustainable, meaningful change on a neurological level. And that can be in a company, a corporation, anywhere around the world, or it can be with an individual. And then the other 10%, maybe 15% of the time, I hack brains purely for fun. If you get nothing else out of this podcast, there's two things. One is, who do you not want to be? It's a really powerful question.
Welcome to season 22 of the podcast. It's been a few weeks, but we're back and with some news. We're now an award-winning podcast. We scooped 4 awards at the Irish Pod Awards a few weeks ago. We won Best Podcast, Best Business Podcast, Best Brand, and Best Male Host. That is a pretty great start to the year. Welcome back for a brand new season. This podcast will help you figure out your founder formula for success in our 3 key areas: body, brain, business. Today, it's about the brain. It's this guy. It's one of the best brain hackers in the world, Keith Barry. This was an absolute privilege. This is a masterclass in figuring out your brain and your psychology. Here is my chat with Keith. Keith, welcome to the pod.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
What an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, it's good to be here.
I think people will be going like, Keith Barry, interesting. Why is he on the business podcast? Because we talk about business, body, and brain.
Yeah.
You are our brain specialist for today. But I want to start with your business.
Yeah.
What does Keith Barry do?
It's a good question. So I am a brain hacker. And the majority of the time now, I hack people's brains to create sustainable, meaningful change on a neurological level. And that can be in a company, a corporation, anywhere around the world, or it can be with an individual. And then the other 10%, maybe 15% of the time, I hack brains purely for fun. So obviously the model of that was different a long time ago. So it was 90% fun factor, 10, 15%. Working with companies, corporations, and individuals. But in the last, I'm going to say pre-COVID, 6 years, ultimately the model has completely changed. So now, 85% of it is hacking brains to fix whatever needs to be fixed in people's brains, you know?
I think that'll surprise people, because I think people know you, they see you on stage, they see you, you know, the public persona. Mm. But this is why it's so interesting to get you on, because a lot of what you do is private work now, which you'd call kind of corporate work, I guess. Why did the model change?
I was always aware that it was going to change. And what I mean by that is my mentors would have been, you know, Tony Sadar, who's still working, by the way, he's 83, working out of his house in Camatili. But Tony would have been one of Ireland's foremost hypnotists back in the day. And nearly always the model of a hypnotist would change. And I'm a hypnotist myself as well as a brain hacker. Obviously, I'm a magician as well. So I do a lot of different things. But ultimately, the model that I saw was always that you get to the peak of performing publicly and then you transition into the corporate space, which is what the likes of Tony did many, many years ago. And the reason I always looked at that, and it's interesting, I'd say when I was 18, I saw Brendan Grace, and lovely man. I got to know him reasonably well, and fantastic performer. And I got to see him down in one of the hotels, the Grand Hotel in Tremor. Place was packed. But then a couple of years later, not that many years later, I went to see him again. And there might have been, I don't know, like 30 people in the audience. And you know, they all had, you know, white / grey / blue hair. And I always said to myself, I never want to be this. And that's not a knock on Brendan, but Brendan just kept going, kept going, kept going. And I always said to myself, I want to get to a certain kind of pinnacle. And this was early on, I thought of this. I want to get to a certain pinnacle in my career. And then I want to do other things, basically. So look, people probably don't know this. I'm the number one selling artist that's ever performed in the Olympia. I've done the Olympia and put more bums on seats in the Olympia than anybody else in history, which is mental to say. And so, like, for example, earlier this year, I decided to do, you know, some legacy-based stuff. So I did the Borgosh. Fill that was 2,000 people. So I still love performing publicly, but I never wanted to be that person that just went on too long in the public eye. Now, I'll still do public events, I'll still do things, but my model has completely changed. So I transitioned in, but again, you know, I've been assisting people with their mindset, if you want to call it that, since I'm 23. So that's 25 years now. And it was just always a small part of my business. Then pre-COVID, 6 years ago, I started doing more and more corporate work, corporate events, so the likes of keynotes, motivational talks. And ultimately then, I suppose COVID probably did fast-track it a bit as well, because when COVID hit, you know, when everybody else was baking banana bread and jumping up and down trampolines, I was like, I don't need any of this. Like, I'm already spending enough time with my family. So you had all these people who are Instagrammers and so on, you know, showing that they're spending enough time with their family now all of a sudden. And I'm like, but shouldn't you be doing that anyway? It was like they were all finding themselves, which I felt a bit sad, actually. I was like, shouldn't you all already know who you are? But when that happened, I was like, that's not me. I'm already spending enough time with my family. So I thought, let's create a business here. So I flipped online, went virtual. And look, that's a whole story in and of itself, which we can talk about if you want. But how I made that happen is kind of interesting. But, you know, ultimately, to cut to the chase, I was probably in the top 10 virtual performers in the world for a good year and a half. So in other words, I was just online every single day performing for Google, Amazon, Dell, Microsoft. Like, you can't throw a stick and not hit a company that I performed for during COVID. And that kind of fast-tracked me further into the corporate world, which I was very happy to do. So I knew the transition time was right. And I'm of a certain age that I knew was the right time to transition as well. Like, I'm 48 now. And, you know, I've enjoyed the work in the public space, on stages especially. But there's certain parts of the public, the stuff that I haven't enjoyed. So I was happy to leave that behind as well, you know. Like, television's a good example. Like, I may do television again in the future, but television, it's a difficult medium and it's only getting more and more difficult. So, you know, at the end of the day, there's a lot of opinions involved, you know, and I'm a visionary. So I would envision something, I would create something, but very often the end product doesn't represent who I really am. So I find that difficult as a person, as a creative. So I was happy to kind of just park that for a while and just go on to do stuff that excites me. And what really excites me is being on a stage predominantly. And I don't mind whether that's for fun or as a keynote speaker. I really don't mind what that is. I'm just really happy being on a stage. So that's kind of my main model now, is being on a stage consistently, enjoying that performance, enjoying that talk, whatever that may be.
But you're doing it in a completely different way. I think that's fascinating. Like, there's so much to unpack there already. Like, the power of scarcity. I think about this all the time.
Yeah.
So many people just expose themselves, for want of a better word, all the time. They're constantly out there.
Yeah.
That Brendan Gray story is superb. It's a perfect example of, like, you can just keep going to the well too many times. Mm. And if you're not refreshing it.
Yeah.
I was only talking to my wife about this yesterday, about a business. It was booming 10 years ago. And we were both kind of going, why do you think it declined? I think it's because it just overexposed itself so much that people want freshness, and they also want, I haven't seen Keith in a while. Oh, he's actually playing one-off show this year.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you're either there or you're not. Perfect example, we are sitting in Baseline, and last week I put on VIP only, invite only event for all the founders that have been on the pod.
Yeah.
Can't buy a ticket, can't just show up. That's the model I look for, and that's the model I'm moving towards, because I think there's power in scarcity, and there's power of being part of something that isn't just commercial and generic.
Yes. So on that, like we mentioned earlier on, off air, 3 times a year max, I do one day offsites. And like that, it's limited to 20 people. If you get a ticket, you get a ticket. We don't go over 20 people. Sometimes there might only be 17 people there. Sometimes there'll be 20, but there will never be more than 20 people at that one day offsite. And I only promote it on LinkedIn, which is interesting again to talk about. A lot of people don't realize that I'm on LinkedIn, and it really is me on LinkedIn.
It takes courage and belief in yourself and your business idea to take the step to set up your own business. In the early stages, entrepreneurship can be a lonely road, even through milestone moments. Deciding to commit the idea you've been mulling over, learning, growing, and developing your skills, building a team to help you along the way, and preparing to launch into new markets. Enterprise Ireland is there for all of those startup moments. From providing advice and guidance to new founders through our startup network, to pre-seed funding and early investment, we're here to help you bring your ambition to fruition. To find out how Enterprise Ireland can help you on your startup journey, visit enterprise-ireland.com. Nostra, an Irish IT company, offers world-class managed IT services, cloud solutions, IT support, and more, all tailored to meet your business needs. So Whether you're streamlining operations or boosting productivity, their expert team is ready to help you. Visit nostra.ie or email info@nostra.ie to see how they can help solve your IT challenges today.
Before we dive into today's episode, I want to share a game changer for your business, Azure Communications. When it comes to print and marketing solutions, these folks, led by CEO Jenny Johnston, are the real deal. Whether you need an eye-catching brochure, sleek business cards, or a full-blown digital campaign, Azure Communications has you covered. They're not just about high-quality prints or digital campaigns, they're also about delivering great results. And here's the best part. Just for listeners of The Entrepreneur Experiment, you can get 20% off your first order. Just give them a call or go online and use the code FOX20. With personalized service and fast turnaround times, Azure Communications will help you make the impact your business deserves. Trust me, when it comes to making your brand stand out, Azure Communications is the provider of choice. Check them out at azurecom.ie. Use code FOX20. Elevate your marketing game today.
Which is intriguing because, you know, when everybody else is doing stuff over here, I always look at that and I go, okay, that's brilliant. That's working. And it's working. And everybody will tell you to jump on that train. I will normally go the opposite direction.
Yeah.
So everybody's doing, a good example of this is like Instagram. So everybody's doing Instagram Reels right now because Reels seem to push through the algorithm. So I said to my videographer there about 4 weeks ago, not that long ago, I said to Dylan, my videographer, let's do long form content. And he thought it was crazy. And I was like, no, trust me. Let's just do something really like long. So we actually made it too long. It was 20 minutes long. And it was a weight loss video because I'm a hypnotist and I like to help people, you know, shift their mindset with stuff like that. So I made a weight loss video, put it up on Instagram. And like, while we're chatting, I'll take out the phone. We'll look at the stats, right? Because it's important. But ultimately that went viral, like crazy viral. And that was interesting to me. So the same thing with Instagram itself. I put a lot of energy into Instagram, mainly for my public events. But I put most of my energy into LinkedIn. Now, if we are sitting here on your podcast, I haven't talked about this before, but I'll only talk about this because to your audience, it'll be interesting. Ultimately, I did that very purposefully because I realized, well, there's nobody like me on LinkedIn. Like, you know, let's be honest, Tommy Tiernan's not on LinkedIn. Do you know what I mean? And he's unlikely to go on LinkedIn. It's not his bag. But for me, I realized I need to talk to business owners. I need to go B2B. I need to talk to, you know, marketing people, CEOs, all of the decision makers with regards to events. Let's just call it events. Because very often I'll get booked for an event. Good example is, like we were talking again earlier, like my only booking right now, like I've been booked solid the whole of this year. Like I could not keep up with the amount of events that I did this year. That's why I'm not doing any public events next year because I just couldn't keep up this year. But like next year, I've just got one event booked in so far, maybe two. Like Mairead looks after my diary, so I haven't really looked. But I know there's one big event at the end of January. I'm in the States for a week. Now that week is, I'm the MC for a full conference for a week.
Wow.
So I glue the whole thing together. So I'm, and it's an interesting idea, right? Because people don't necessarily see me in that space.
Yeah.
But you have a choice. You have a choice. You can get the standard MC for a week who will glue things together and do it in a very efficient way. Or I bring something a little bit extra because I'll energize in and out of all of the different speakers. I'll glue it all together. I'll do kind of whatever you want to call it, brain hacking, mind games. Like this event has 7,000 people coming to it. So it's a big event. Like.
And it's such an art.
Yeah.
It's such an art to MC something. It's only something I've started to learn the last kind of 2 years. There's such an energy required.
Yeah.
Because it's very easy to get up there and go, our next speaker is Keith Parry. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very
much. Well, the problem is that, like most people default go to that.
And it's difficult.
But the events end up really boring.
They do.
You know?
Because you're a listicle.
And again,
you're
literally
just an announcer going, oh, next up is Ben. Next up is Gary. And you do need that flow. I was only literally doing a debrief with someone on an event we ran last week. And I was like, it needs more flow. It needs more things to break things up. The audience were like, because you can see it when you're standing up there. You can see the audience is going.
Yeah. And that's
the
more
energy just.
And that's different. More events than not.
Yes.
End up like that. So I do a lot of MC work. So I was MCing this week. I'm MCing that event in January for the whole week. Like it's crazy that I'm there.
How
for
do
the whole
you
week.
Pick what you do?
It's like it's largely based upon, I mean, look, let's be honest, it's largely based upon a company's budget. Like very often people will come to us and they'll say they have a certain budget and I'm very often over that budget. And, you know, the price is the price is the price, as they say. You know, there's any amount of speakers out there for 500 euros. There's any amount of them for, you know, in Ireland. There's a lot of them around the kind of 3,000 euro mark. Like, I'm way above that. And I don't mean that in a facetious way. I just mean I have a certain price point.
You got to value yourself. So, scarcity. You got
to
value.
So first of all, it's price point. And then second of all, I always have a Zoom call with the client to make sure that they know I'm a right fit for them. And I know I'm a right fit, you know, for them as well. So we'll have a 15-minute Zoom call. Free Zoom call. Very often people in my world, they charge for those Zoom calls. I don't know if you know that. Like a lot of like US speakers, they'll charge for a consultancy call for about 15 minutes. They'll charge a lot of money for a 15-minute call. I don't. I just make sure that I'm the right fit for a company. I explain what I do. And ultimately then it's based on that. And it's based on, I think, an energy between me and the person that I'm speaking to. And then we'll decide if I'm the right fit or not. And you know, very often, you know, I'm not the right fit. And then I might recommend somebody else maybe, or we'll just, you know, we'll call it there. But, you know, for me, more often than not, I kind of am a right fit because I'm just a bit different. I'm a scientist first and foremost, so most people don't know that about me. So everything when I speak from a stage at a keynote event, for example, all of the topics that I talk about, so I've got any number of keynote topics. So I've got redefine the impossible, which is how to redefine the impossible on a daily basis, regardless of circumstances. Beyond words is my keynote on nonverbal communication tactics. Like, you know, I've got a leadership keynote. I've got loads of them, right? Metamorphical thinking is my workshop on creativity. So I'm always just trying to, you know, present ideas and concepts that they wouldn't have gotten elsewhere. And then my USP is that I entertain as I perform. So even in the keynote, I'll do 70% content or takeaway, and I'll do 30% entertainment. Now, here's the interesting thing. That can be skewed by the client. So it doesn't have to stay like that.
Right.
So sometimes they'll say, give us 50-50.
What do you really want?
Yeah.
The big question, right?
Like I did an event for Broadridge. They're a fintech firm out of the US. So I did an event for them mid-COVID. The first one was pure entertainment. And after that, the CEO just said, that was brilliant, but now I want only content. So I can do only content. So I probably did another 10 events for them that were just content.
I think people would be surprised to hear this, that you go in and do specifically two businesses. You
yeah.
do specific business content within the business.
Yeah. And then you know, I flew to Orlando for them, same company. And then presented, you know, other things on the stage for them as well. So I very often work with the client to deliver bespoke information, bespoke keynotes as well. But back to this just for a minute, just so people understand the long form content. So as I sit in front of you here now, this one post.
Where did it go?
Instagram.
It went to Instagram. Okay.
But it was too long for Instagram. So it actually cut off. Right. So here's the interesting thing. It's 22 minutes long, but as a post, you can only go 15 minutes.
Oh.
Right. And I didn't know that when I put it up.
I didn't know that either.
It's for weight loss and then it cuts off 15 minutes. So very often the comments in this.
You see,
like,
that's the teaser. You did know. And now you're like, oh,
I wish I knew.
Join up for an extra 5 minutes.
No, but here's the interesting thing. But if I go into, so it has 115,000 views,
oof,
530 comments, 1,997 likes. But I'm more interested in it when I go into view insights. Now, here's the thing. How much watch time do you think it's had? So how much time do you think people have spent watching that or listening to it?
You mean the average time?
So it's 15 minutes because it cuts at 15 minutes. So it's 15 minutes long. So if you imagine one person may have watched it for 15 minutes, right? How much do you think that the full watch time? So in total.
Oh, God, I don't know, Keith.
But have a guess.
I'm awful at maths.
Yeah, but just throw a figure out.
I'm going to say average watch time has been 4 minutes, so 500,000.
Well, I don't know what that would be, 500,000 minutes.
So like, that would be...
So anyway, look, I'll just tell you. So it's 120 days.
Oof.
Like, that's mad to think of that now. Oh, so while everybody else is over here creating reels that are getting like, on average, 2,000 views or something, and maybe like, you know, 10 hours watch time, I'm over here and I'm getting 120 days of watch time. Now, what's really interesting to me with that is that's what brands out there listening to this need to be looking at, is not some influencer who claims that they have 2 million followers. Like, brands are not really paying attention at all, let me tell you, to interactions. They're not really paying attention to algorithms. When it comes to paying influencers, and I know this because I'm looking at, like, you know, people out there who are doing endorsement deals. Mm. I'm looking at the results of those endorsement deals, and people are spending a lot of money on crap. And what I mean by crap is, like, the influencers aren't crap, but they're the analysis of their Instagram and Facebook or whatever it is that they're on is not being done by the brands. I don't do many brand deals. Like, I do a few, but I don't do many. But it's intriguing to me. I've only 85,000 followers. I say only, like, but it's still a decent bank.
Right? Yeah.
If you're looking, but it's interesting. Any brands I've dealt with, they've never asked to do a deep dive into my insights, and I'll allow them. Like, some influencers won't, because a lot of their audience is bought, right? Mm. So they're not real. But it seems that brands are lazy to me. Still, even knowing what we know,
What are they looking at, and what they should they be looking at?
Well, right now, literally, the one thing I get asked is, how many followers do you have? Like, that's irrelevant. It should be, what's the reach that you have through the algorithm?
And the engagement.
Right, so look at that. That's like wild reach. I'm only using that as an example. And that's only one video. Like, another video of mine, like, would not get that reach. I'm very open about that. But if you get it right, the reach can be astronomical. And I've never paid, never is the wrong word, I haven't paid in the last, like, 3 years, any boosts on any of my Instagram. So it's all real. It's all organic.
Yeah.
And interestingly, like, over here, I've got one of the biggest Facebook pages in the country, and I barely use it myself. So, like, I've got 150,000 followers on Facebook.
Is it still a thing? Someone said last week, oh, Facebook is still a thing.
Is it still a thing for you? It is still a thing. It's more difficult to reach your audience. So depending on the content you put up, you might get, like, literally, like, one comment. Like, I'll put up the same video on Instagram, the same video on, Facebook. Facebook will get, like, one comment, and Instagram could get, like, we'll just say 50 comments, 100 comments, whatever it is, right? And that's really hard to solve that problem, because I think where it's at is Facebook wants you to pay. They want you to pay to reach your audience, and I refuse to pay.
Have you a business page?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I refuse to pay. You see, you have to have a business page, because if it,
over a certain
amount
of followers,
it limits you to 5,000. Yeah. And then you have to flip it into a business page.
That's how they get you, yeah.
You know, so it's intriguing to me, all of that. Like there's a campaign out there at the moment, that I've observed it, and it's with a very well-known influencer in Ireland. Lovely person, good solid brand, I would say. But I can see the campaign's doing nothing. Like, the campaign's not getting any comments, it's not getting any interaction, and that person's getting paid a lot of money for that. Mm. Isn't that just wasted money, you know? I did a campaign recently for a movie. I barely even remember the name of the movie, but they really only wanted access to my TikTok page. Now, on TikTok, I've only got 55,000 followers, but it's interesting to me that the brand, it was one of the bigger studios. I don't want to name it, because I'll just get it wrong, but ultimately it was for a movie, something in the Purple Crayon. We could look it up.
Okay.
But it was a family movie. And ultimately, I was on holidays in Marbella, and the inquiry came in, and I was like, can you do something in the next 24 hours for this movie, where basically, whatever the character is, things appear when he uses a purple crayon? And I was like, sure, here it is. What do you want?
Marbella, and a holiday paid for.
Well, I went to a pet shop in Marbella, and I bought a goldfish. We named him. We named him Doc. And then I got a purple crayon, and I drew a goldfish on an index card, and I made the goldfish appear as if by magic out of the index card and into a wine glass full of water, of course. But that got over 1 million views on
That's
TikTok.
Class.
So it's interesting. And that world is kind of new to me, as in matching up brands. Like, I did a campaign recently with O'Brien's. So I'm O'Brien's official coffee ambassador. So Brian's Sandwich Bar.
Okay.
Their coffee's amazing.
Yeah. Okay.
And,
well, you got to say that, but yeah, go on.
Well, you know, I don't. I'll only get behind brands that I'll really feel are aligned with my brand. That's interesting you say that. I won't do a campaign with a brand just for money. So I'll give you a good example. I've got a brand deal sitting there right now, which is for a lot of money. I'm having a meeting with them tomorrow, but it's for, I don't want to say too much, but it's for a supplement company. I haven't agreed to do it with them yet. I want to talk to their scientist. Now, another influencer will just say yes straight away.
Yeah.
I want to talk to their scientist and learn, because I'm a scientist, so I can talk scientist to scientist. I want to know about their supplement. I want a deep dive into the supplement before I get behind it.
Especially if you're putting it into your body.
Yeah.
It's one rule. If you're putting it into your body, know what the hell it is.
Yeah, but even coffee, right? So I'm a coffee snob. Like, we've got...
I saw you post about this recently. Where were you? London? You were
it's driving me mad.
Haven't got a good coffee
in
London.
I was in London. I had three coffees and they're all crap.
There's so many changes, see. That's the thing. I was in London a few months ago. I was like, I could see four Pretz. I was like, I feel like I'm in an alternate universe. I was standing on a corner waiting across the street and there's a Pret on every corner.
But you see, I was in the middle of nowhere. I was in Windsor. So I was in a hotel in Windsor. Their coffee was just diabolic in the hotel. It was a 5-star hotel. Bad coffee.
Hotel coffee's nearly always bad.
Yeah, it wasn't good. And then I got a coffee on the road. Wasn't good. Coffee in the airport. Wasn't good. I was like, oh my God. And I knew what to do in that scenario. I knew that Aer Lingus would have the filter coffee on the plane, which is actually reasonably good. Have you ever had Aer Lingus?
Yeah, I have,
filter?
Yeah.
It's actually not bad.
The little thing with the thing on top. Yeah, I've had
so
it.
So I just waited until I got on the plane. I was like, thank God, at least I have a half decent coffee.
You need one of those AeroPresses, little travel AeroPresses with you.
Oh, I have one. And I wasn't mad about it, so I just didn't bother bringing it. So yeah, but I've got a Schmeg machine in the house. We've got an espresso machine in the house. Like, we're all coffee snobs. Yeah. So anyway, I wouldn't get rid of brand just for money's sake. But O'Brien's, like, we came up with a really interesting campaign, which means I'm omnipresent. So I'm big on that word, right? Omnipresent.
Right. Sounds
and,
good.
And so it worked for O'Brien's, it worked for me. Basically, we created these tent cards. You scan a QR code and you get put into a mindful moment with me drinking your coffee. So in other words, you get to listen to me. Just take 3 minutes out of your day while you're
like that.
But then create an anchor with the coffee. So not just in that moment, every moment after that, when you're having your coffee, it'll remind you of a certain thing from your life to just give you like a dopamine hit and just that mindful moment while drinking your coffee, as opposed to just slurping coffee.
That's why I think campaigns should be done, because you see a lot of campaigns and it's like, hey, I'm just going, hey, I read Keith's book. It's really good. You should check it out. And it's like, there's no depth. There's no insight. It's not like, oh, you know, I've been working with Keith now for 6 months. I've just gone through his book. Here are the five things that I've learned. And here's how it's impacted me.
Yeah.
Not even that level of depth. It's just very much kind of here. Because I think that's worked for a while. But I think the influencer scene is dying a slow death because...
I think you're right.
They're not. I think it's going to go this way. People like yourself who have a career and have a skill are going to flourish. People who got famous or been famous are going to die in the vine.
But I think it's not just having a skill. Here's the interesting point. I think it's about caring, right? I think I think you have to care about the brand that you work for. Too many people in my position will just do the money grab, right?
And it's so obvious. People's bullshit radar is sky high.
Like, yeah.
In a second,
I agree with
you. Sense it out. And they're right to, because I always say this about the pod. I'm very, very picky about who I get on and how I get them on, because spend an hour with someone.
Yeah.
That's such a big commitment.
Mm-hmm.
Out of your day, out of your week, to spend an hour with Keith and Gary has to be good. Has to be authentically good, has to be good every week. You know, so you have to be so careful about people's time. I think too many people, like you said, will just kind of go, yeah, whatever, a couple of grand.
Yeah, but let's, and look, I don't knock that either. Some people...
A couple of grand now, which you're sacrificing.
But some people need the money, right? So they need to take the money, they need to take the opportunity. Some people need brand awareness to use the other brand for their own brand awareness. So it's a nuanced area, you know what I mean? Like it's not as clear cut as I suppose both of us are making it. It's clear cut for me in my own brand, but I do have also an understanding of other brands as well, other influencers. Like we were talking earlier on, like one of my contemporaries, good friend of mine in the UK, like we both started off kind of doing the same thing, like 27 years ago, I was just doing close-up magic. That's all I did, right? So I was just playing with a deck of cards, going around Dublin, doing events and doing close-up magic with cards and coins and all the rest of it. And we both started doing the same thing. And here we are all these years later, I'm still friends with him. And he's kind of scratching his head because he's still, like, and I'm not knocking it. I love close-up magic. I think magic is a great addition to events, but that's what he's still doing. And he's not loving it anymore. Like he's not loving it because he's just doing the same thing day in, day out. And he's just still performing at weddings. Whereas now, all these years later, I actually have to like just do a quick synopsis for fun more than anything of the amount of television that I've done. Because even I forget some of the TV shows that I've done. I've done so many.
So what's the difference, Keith? Like what's the difference between, because I want to dig into your business side. What's the difference between your business and his business? And why did the fork in the road happen?
I've examined this, right? And it's a difficult one to answer because where my drive, where my ambition comes from, I find that hard to pinpoint. I think, so I had a great childhood. So, you know, my dad was successful. I would call us just middle class. Like, we weren't rich, we weren't poor, but we did well, and we were in a nice house. But I think I have an inherent level of fear of failure, and I'm not sure where that comes from. And I also have a fear of not being able to provide for my family. I definitely have that fear. I think it's probably a healthy level of fear, but I do have just mad ambitions, right? And I'm driven, and sometimes, you know, too driven. So, you know, I just wanted to be the best that I could possibly be at whatever it is that I'm doing. So a good example is I wasn't good in school. Not that I wasn't good, but I was below average, I would say, in school. Because I was, and I put that some part down to the fact I was in a really bad school, like really bad, like just bullied, and teachers were crap. And it was just a bad school. And look, some teachers are out there who probably taught me thinking, oh, we weren't that bad. Okay, I'm not talking about you if you're listening, but like...
It's all relative. Your experience was bad.
But my experience wasn't good. Like the first time I repeated leaving. So the first time I got like 360 points the leaving, and then the second time I got 435. So I don't consider myself like mega intelligent, because if you're really intelligent, there were one or two in there that got the 600 points or whatever, because they just... They outworked the system, and they were intelligent enough to outwork the system. I wasn't that smart.
Good at remembering. Intelligence is like, you know, it's like that quote about, I know a lot of stupid PhDs.
But then I went to college, and I kind of flourished in college.
What did you want to do, Keith? Because I think when people look at you, they'd be like, oh, that's an unusual career. What did you want to do?
I knew from 5 years of age that I was going to be a full-time magician. Right? So I knew from five. It was my parents that kind of coerced me into going to college. They were like, you know, magic is great as a hobby, you're going to college. So that's why I went to college. And I picked science to kind of resist the system. So Seamus Barry, who was our career guidance counselor, he gave me an aptitude test in school, and he said, whatever you do, just don't do science, because your aptitude test says you won't be good at science. So that's why I picked science.
Career guidance was always pretty ropey in our school.
He was great. He was a nice guy.
Ours wasn't.
He's still out there. He's a good guy. But ultimately... Yeah, that's why I picked science. And then I got the number one honours chemistry degree that ever came out of UCG at that time. So in 98, they sent me a £50 cheque and a plaque in the post. I got papers published as an undergraduate. So I flourished in college.
Why do you think?
Because I don't know where that drive came from, but I wanted to be the best at what I was doing. And then when I came out of there, I was a cosmetic scientist.
Did that drive change, though, Keith, from school to college? Because you said in school it was quite difficult.
Yeah, it did.
Quite hard.
It did.
Was it the environment changed or your drive changed?
The environment. And then the drive.
Okay.
So the environment was an amazing experience for me, just to be able...
So you moved to Galway?
Yeah, I moved to Galway and became really good at chemistry, and then became a cosmetic scientist. So I was going up through the ranks of Oriflame, which was a Swedish cosmetics company. I was going up through the ranks of Oriflame very fast. So by the age of 23, I was down here still doing magic. So I was performing magic at, you know, the Kitchen Nightclub, which was owned by Bono and U2 at the time. And I was doing weddings. I was doing like everything. But then during the day, I was like 9 to 5, I was a cosmetic scientist. But by the age of 23, I was looking after full-scale production, or overseeing full-scale production for Oriflame in Poland. So I was flying over to Warsaw. I was 23. I was overseeing like their emulsions and their creams. I was the guy standing there as a scientist putting like a number of drops of aloe vera into the emulsion, so marketing could rightfully get the claim, you know, aloe vera anti-aging property and so on. So I was good at that, but I always knew what I was going to do. So eventually at 23, I just sat down, typed in my notice and said, you know, I'm off. And they were like, what do you mean you're off? And I was like, oh, I'm going to just try this full-time magician.
Why did you make the decision? What was
I knew I would always regret it. I knew I'd always regret. And it's interesting that I see my daughter now. She's really driven. She's way more driven at her age than I ever was. So she's 16, really driven. But I see myself and her a little bit now. She just got it a bit younger than
but
I.
But that's interesting, because you've created the environment for her, obviously, then.
Yeah.
To be driven.
Yeah, for sure. I think me and my wife, we've created the environment to allow them. And we're not pushy parents. That's the interesting thing. She's just pushing herself. But ultimately, yeah, it just jumped out when I was 23, wrote up my notice and never looked back.
Was there something to push you, or did you just, that was your plan?
No, I realized the time was right. So I knew the time was right. And I kind of said this to myself, if my day job is getting in the way of being a magician, in other words, if I got, I'm talking specifically magic kind of at that time, if I was almost busier doing magic than I am at my day job, in other words, I was doing 5 nights a week as opposed to 1 night a week out there gigging. And I was just about earning enough money that I could jump ship.
Right. So that was the point you'd kind of reached up, because we've a lot of people listening who want to start businesses.
Yeah.
And I'm always trying to relate it back to them going, there's no perfect time, but I like to dig into people's stories to go, what was the moment? Because the biggest thing that kills businesses, people never start.
Yeah. But then also, you know, you've got the likes of Gary Vee and all these other people going, start now. Don't, you know, and I'm not one of those. I would say, actually, just first of all, obviously spend your time, learn your craft, whatever that craft is. But then secondarily, you know, set up your business, but then ride it as a side hustle. And when the side hustle becomes like busier than your main business, then you know. You inherently know intuitively.
Yeah, I agree.
If you just start now and start today, and like you might just, you know, you might just have way too many failures that bring you down. You might just never make it. Like, and a good example of that is, like, here we are 27 years later, like no other magician's done a TV show in Ireland, right? Except, actually, I say that, but I almost forgot Joe Daly, good guy. He's got a kid's magic show. It's kind of a magic show on the RT Junior. But besides Joe, nobody else has done a magic show. Nobody else has done what I'm doing. And here's why. Because A, I don't think a lot of people have the drive, but B, they just don't get that timing right. So a lot of the magicians and entertainers that I know, and I don't want to get too caught up with magic either, but just as an example, a lot of them leave school early and they just start doing magic.
Mm.
I think the best thing I ever did was fight through my leaving cert. The best thing my parents ever did was get me to college, because I learned life skills.
Yeah,
I learned how to be good at like chemistry and maths and all of these different things, which then I applied to the business. And then all these years later, like, I self-manage. The main team is me and my wife. She runs the back end of everything that I do. Then I've got an extended team of about 7 people who help, depending on what the projects are. And that's it. But like, I wouldn't be able to do that without all these different life skills that I learned over.
You see the bigger picture. I agree with you. You see the bigger picture, because you can become too siloed. You can become too singular in your vision.
Yeah, if you're just doing one thing and you don't expand out. That's why I like to learn about business. I like to listen to business podcasts. I like to read. Like, I'm a voracious reader. Like, if we think about these four walls, like, I've got 2 libraries at least the size of these four walls, all 4 of them packed with books.
Brilliant.
And those books are on everything.
Our quick fire round is a book question, so you can
keep that at the back
of your mind, what you're going to recommend. I'll get a couple off you. So, do you think of yourself as a businessman?
Yeah, first and foremost as a businessman.
And has that always been the case?
Nope. I think 15 years ago, I was first and foremost a creator. And I was first and foremost an entertainer. Secondarily, then I was a brain hacker to help people with whatever problems that they have. That's 15 years ago. I think that model changed for me about, again, I would say 5-6 years ago. I realized if I'm going to really be successful for a long time, I really need to understand my own business. I really need to understand that I need to reach out to other people for help when I need help. And with areas that I don't understand, for example, I need to learn new skills. And that's when I realized, actually, I just need to be a businessman first and foremost. So, you know, again, a good example of that is what happened in COVID, which I mentioned earlier, but just as an example, right? As a business person, everybody else bounced back to that story. Everybody else bounced up down their trampolines. And here's what I did. I got lucky in one regard. I just built a cabin in my back garden to get out of the house and have a new office when COVID hit. So I had an empty shell in the back garden. And then when COVID hit, a few weeks later, or into COVID, I just rang one of the extended team. Joe Clear has worked for me for over 20 years now. He runs all my live shows, but think of him as actually a real life MacGyver. He's MacGyver. He can do anything.
Handy lad to have.
But he built his own house and stuff. He's predominantly a musician. He's a singer-songwriter, a very successful one. He's one of these guys that people don't really know in Ireland, but he's out there. He could be in Germany or something this week writing songs for somebody.
Know his songs. You might know his name.
Exactly, yeah. And ultimately, I rang Joe and I said, listen, let's set up a studio in the back garden. Here's the budget. Go get a camera. Let's set up a green screen and let's figure out what this Zoom thing is. He was doing that. And when he was doing that, that's when I went on LinkedIn. and I started to fire up LinkedIn. And I'm telling you now, I learned more than most people would know about LinkedIn in a short. I took courses on LinkedIn. I figured out LinkedIn fast. I figured out LinkedIn ads. I figured out like a lot about LinkedIn. And then I went to Fiverr. Did you ever use Fiverr?
Yeah.
I went to Fiverr and I got some person there to get me 3,000 email addresses. Okay. I wasn't even thinking about GDPR at the time, but anyway, it's too late now. So I said, get me 3,000 email addresses and get me LinkedIn.
Of who? Like of like directors?
So just people who were in charge of events within companies.
Okay.
So mainly the marketing people, assistants to directors themselves as well, but ultimately 3,000 people involved in potentially booking somebody like me. Got those 3,000 emails. I use ActiveCampaign, so I've got ActiveCampaign.
What is that?
So it's a CRM. So okay. I could have used that to blast email all 3,000 people. I chose not to. So I gave 1,000 email addresses to Mairead. I gave 1,000 email addresses to a guy I mentor in Cork, Daniel Cremin, and I took 1,000 email addresses myself. And we got electronic press kits made up about the fact that I was performing virtually. This is before I even had any materials. This is what I'm talking about, being a business person.
Yeah,
I'll figure out the show after the fact. I just need to market.
This is brilliant. This is exactly what I want people to talk about. Come on, experiments they've done to figure shit out. Because people will be listening to this going, I never knew Keith Barry did this.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like people have no idea.
The hell out of it.
Oh, yeah, they have no idea. So Mairead sent out 1,000 emails. Daniel sent out 1,000. I sent out 1,000. We figured out Zoom, Joe set up the studio, and then nothing happened. And I was like, well, that was the greatest waste of time, energy, and money I've spent. Because I spent a lot of money on the equipment in the cabin and so on. And I was like, well, that was a giant waste of time. And then we got one gig. I can't remember who the gig was for. It was like the first gig. And the first gig, the camera didn't work before we figured out the camera wasn't rigged up somewhere. So I just did it on the laptop. Do you know what I mean? Like literally sitting there on a laptop, on Zoom, doing a gig. But it worked. And then I think that person put up a recommendation on LinkedIn or whatever. Anyway, if I got one, I got them all for a year and a half. The avalanche happened. It was just like...
the perfect timing.
Yeah, we ended up doing like 7 a day at one stage.
What?
Yeah. It's like 7 a day. Waking up, doing a gig for MasterCard Australia, going back to bed for 3 hours, waking up and doing a gig for people in America, going to sleep, waking back up. Like Joe would fall asleep, I'd fall asleep.
Where were they coming from, Keith, though? Was it the emails or was it LinkedIn or was it whatever?
So it was all of the above, right?
Right.
So I was hustling LinkedIn. The emails had been sent out. Mairead was responding to those as they started to come back in. Word started to get back out. Then as a business person, I started to cut video from the events that we did. Then I would promote that on LinkedIn. Interestingly, I used LinkedIn ads. I found that they didn't work.
They're mad expensive as well.
So as an example, I don't think LinkedIn ads are where they should be at. I think LinkedIn themselves should look at that. Like if I'm spending good money on LinkedIn, and by the way, I knew how to optimize my ads on LinkedIn. I took a course on it. And taking a course is one thing, right? But then inherently knowing it. So I spent money to learn, right? So I spent money in the course, but then more importantly, I spent money on ads. And then I figured out the ads and how to optimize those ads. They don't work. As far as I can see, they're not good.
I've never had a good result from them. I think LinkedIn, to go back on your earlier point, I think LinkedIn is the biggest hack. People hate on it all the time. Mm. The organic reach from LinkedIn is bananas. You'll get that nowhere else. Apart from maybe TikTok, but again, the quality of TikTok is useless. But the organic quality reach of LinkedIn is through the roof.
Well, I'll give you an example of TikTok, right? So I know somebody who on TikTok has got 7 million. An Irish person. He's got 7 million followers on TikTok, right?
Everyone's Googling right
now. He's an entertainer, right? 7 million followers on TikTok. He's an entertainer, a decent entertainer, and he can't put 40 bums on seats in a theatre because those people are from all over the world.
This is it.
And then what are you selling? Who are you selling to? So I realized again years ago, like I'm growing all of my channels to sell. Everybody has something to sell, right? So I'm always coming from a space of what am I selling? Why am I there? What am I selling? You know, I have an opportunity in January to do lots of different things, podcasts, guests like this, right? I'm just being straight with it. Like in January, I've nothing really to sell. Like in my head, you know, I'll just be busy doing my own thing and figuring out, mapping out the year and so on. So I'm just saying no to everything in January.
You know, timing's everything. Clean. Timing is everything.
Yeah. But for me, yeah, first and foremost, a business person, and always trying to think of like, what's the next thing for me and what excites me as well. So I mentioned legacy based stuff. Like I'm 48, I've been at a long time. So I want to do, if I'm going to do a public show, like, look, let's just be straight about it. If I do another public show, I'm not doing any public shows next year because I'm just too busy in the corporate space. So if I do a public show, it's going to be the Three Arena because that's legacy based, right? It's like, let's do the biggest. Let's do the one I haven't done, whatever it is, 12,000 seats. Let's do that. Like that excites me. That gets me. Well, yeah. Like doing the Olympia, it's fun, right? Still love it. Never lost the hunger and desire for it.
There's a special feeling in the Olympia.
But let's go
isn't
to
it?
Another level. Mm. Like, let's not, you know, go to the same audience and do the same thing. Let's go big. Let's go. And it's expensive, right? And it's a huge risk involved in that. But that kind of excites me as well. That drives me even further and faster, you know?
Going back to your power of scarcity as well. If you do right, that's going to be 2026. People are like, okay, right. Well, that's. When it's gone, it's gone. Talk to me about selection of projects, because I think that's a huge one for entrepreneurs as well. Picking the right project. Mm-hmm. How do you pick? So like we're looking at your book right here, Sleep Hacks, right? How did you decide, right? I'm going to devote, how long did it take to write?
A year. I'm not, and this is interesting. So let's talk about weak points, and I can talk about the book to this. Here's my weak points. First of all, I'm a technophobe. So that's why I said, Joe, figure out Zoom, figure out the cabin, figure out... I wouldn't know how to turn that camera on.
Really?
Yeah, it doesn't interest me. Like even we mentioned earlier, like Peter Stringer, a couple of years ago, gave me a Whoop, right? And I can see you've got a Whoop on. Like,
I love it.
I didn't even turn the Whoop on.
Really?
Because I just have no interest in technology. Like... It's actually that first and foremost. Like I've got a Fitbit, I've got a Whoop, and I get it.
It's interesting because you're very good on social. Like that surprises me now.
I've made myself good on social. I know that that's absolutely necessary in the world that we're in, right?
So needed to sell and
so
get good at it.
Forced myself to get good at social.
See
right?
The theme here.
Like interestingly, people wouldn't know my growth spurt. I can't remember, but it's like this time last year I was probably only at 37,000 followers on Instagram, and I realized I've been stuck there for a long time. So I purposely put a lot of energy into Instagram the last year and a half. So that's why I'm up at 85,000, all real, all organic, mostly Irish. So when it comes to projects, like first of all, I'm infinitely curious, right? I'm really curious about everything, interestingly, other than tech.
But that's a blessing and a curse, right?
Yeah. So it is a curse. It can be a curse because you just get interested in so many things. It's like, where does your attention go? But like, so the tech stuff, I generally farm out, except I realized I farmed out like years ago, long time ago, I farmed out like my socials, right? So I hired people to do my socials for me. And I realized, like, I'm being sincere with this. The majority of them, they're just gangsters. Like, because when you look at the back end of what they've done, They say they won't do something and they always do it. So in other words, I'll never ever buy followers. I'll never ever do anything untoward. And then if you really gain your keys back and you look at it, that's exactly what they did to get those followers and so on. So I realized that was kind of smoke and mirrors. So I had to get good at that. And now I look after all my own socials and I'll never give them away ever again. So it's really me on LinkedIn. So a good example is, you know, I did a LinkedIn campaign there, but a year and a half ago, I realized I needed a campaign going. I did a campaign. I remember a guy came back to me, Johnny was the name, and he came back and he said, this is obviously a scam. This can't be the real Keith Barry, you know, and he was basically telling me to go away.
We're so used to scams online though.
Yeah, but then I used voicemail. So I don't know if this is a good tip for people out there. A lot of people don't notice. Like on your phone, you can just leave a voice message for somebody on LinkedIn. So I just voice messaged him and I said, hey, it's actually really Keith Barry here. Let's jump on a 15-minute discovery call on Zoom. It's free. There's no... And he told me afterwards, he just jumped on that call to see was it actually me.
That's hilarious.
And then we went back and forth. And then, I don't know, like 6 weeks later, I was down in Portugal doing an event farm.
Nice.
Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
But back to the projects.
I said the voice note thing here in the pod about a year and a half ago. And I was like, oh, I love voice. I got bombarded. My voice.
Oh yeah. Careful. Yeah, don't voicemail me. I'm not answering if you do.
Because then I was like getting all these like 3-minute long voice notes. I was like,
well, I know, yeah.
Oh, I don't even know where to start with this. Maybe set context first.
I'll give a good example in a moment. Don't let me forget, because we'll go back to how we choose projects. But this is an important thing for anybody out there who's just a business person, a business owner, or whatever. I've got a good tip for you for LinkedIn, which I did not that long ago. It was really good. Time consuming, but good. But back to the projects. I always just go with what interests me at any moment in time. So sleep. I realized like I'm not a great sleeper. Like naturally, I'm not a great sleeper. So a year ago, or well, I suppose a year and a half ago now, I realized, okay, well, actually, and this is how things come to me, right? I'm a hypnotist. I've literally put tens of thousands of people to sleep, both on stage and privately. And the last thing I say to them is sleep deep.
The irony was not lost on me. I was going to make that point to you going, surely this is like...
Do you know what I mean? Sleep deep. So I wasn't a great sleeper. So then as a scientist, I thought I'll do the research first. And hence I thought, okay, let's write a book on this. Went to Gill, who'd published my other two books. And they said, yeah, this is great because I have a unique twist on it. And so the twist in the Sleep Hacks book is ultimately, I address it from the physical standpoint, the conscious mind standpoint, psychological, and what I call the hypnomagical, which is self-hypnosis. So those three areas combined will help you with deep sleep. Whereas other books that I've read or that I've looked at, they might just go with dietary advice or they might have a couple of quick hacks. Whereas mine is a system. You make your own system out of what you think will work for you. You pick one part from each section. You combine those three areas and ultimately you try that for a month and then you see how you get on. I've yet to meet somebody whose sleep hasn't improved by just doing that alone. And then they tweak it as they go along. So what works for me might not work for you. So that's what the book is about. And then I really was interested in the kind of new science that's out there. So I mentioned to you earlier on, like what works for me is two kiwis every single night, 3 hours before bedtime, I eat two kiwis because I realized you can't buy melatonin in Ireland. So if...
Yeah, it's a weird one, isn't it?
It's so weird. I mean, it's beyond weird. Like if I drive into town here from where we are and I go to Stephen's Green, I can get like CBD of any probably amount. And I can also get, I'm not au fait with the terminology, but is it THC? Is that the other one? Like the synthetic form of CBD. But anyway, the synthetic form of CBD, I think it's called THC. You can get that in jelly form in Stephen's Green, and it's synthesized by somebody, some scientist somewhere.
Oh, I know what you mean, yeah. CBD, yeah.
Yeah, but you can't buy
melatonin.
Natural melatonin, which we produce naturally. So I don't know why that is. I don't know why Ireland has banned it, because it's legal in nearly every other country.
It's everywhere, yeah.
But anyway, good news is you don't need it. You just need two kiwis, because kiwis will kick in melatonin naturally into your system. You'll have to, like, take the two kiwis for about 10 days before you see a difference.
Okay.
And ultimately you will see a difference. So two kiwis, binaural beats work for me. So they're two different frequencies played into your ears and your mind kind of hallucinates a third frequency, which relaxes you down into a, you know, alpha, theta, hopefully down to a delta brainwave sleep.
I've used it for deep work, all right. I've never used it for sleep, but I've used it for, I'm just like locking in for like 90 minutes deep work. I'll just put it on
and then
not focus on anything.
And then self-hypnosis. But that's why that book got written. But then, you know, also, when it comes to, for example, like other projects, like I'm really interested in leadership. What is a leader? Like, what is it required to be a good leader? And as I said to you, we talked off air, like a lot of kind of leadership experts, thought leaders, first and foremost, I look at them and I go, well, what's your backstory? Like, why are you like qualified to talk about leadership? And I mean that just in a, I suppose, a curious way. Because very often we don't hear their backstory. And again, I would say the same about myself. People would look at me and go, well, what does he know about leadership? Well, what if I told you when I'm in the Olympia Theatre, I'm leading a team of 100 plus people? Like, people don't think of it like that, right? Like, my core group is 7. So I'm leading a team of 7 consistently through the year, like off and on, like, you know, depending on projects. And then when I'm in a theatre, I'm leading up to 100 people.
This is the kind of twist I wanted to bring on this today, because like I think people look at people like yourself and don't see, it doesn't just happen. You don't just walk on stage and then you walk out and go, oh, see you later, guys. Thanks for that.
Like I'm leading the sound technicians, the lighting technicians. I'm leading my own team. I'm leading the ushers, how they're to do what they're doing. You know, like it's wild. So I have this concept that leadership is an illusion. And even at that, like to get back to your point, how do I pick projects? I always pick the title first, which is really interesting. I don't know how I discovered this, but like if I'm thinking of a live show, Like the last live show is called Mind Games, the one I just finished. And literally I just thought of that title, Mind Games, and then went all the way backtracked down to the start and then back up again. Same with Sleep Hacks. Sleep Hacks, good title. Then what is a hack? A hack is something short that you can apply to your life to try and make your life, you know, more proficient, more interesting. You know, hack something down so it's short so you can use it quickly. So then backtrack all the way down through that. And with the Leadership Illusion, you know, I think it's interesting that all of the different leadership keynotes that I've heard, people are talking about purpose. And there's a lot to be said for these things. So don't get me wrong, I'm not knocking this, but they're all very samey. Hmm. And companies out there are looking for that twist. What's that thing that's a bit different? So it's about, you know, very often leadership is about authenticity, purpose, vision, yada, yada, yada. It's kind of rinse and repeat. Some people do it in an interesting way. There's relevance to what they're saying, but it's still the same content very often. Whereas I'm kind of saying, well, isn't leadership just actually an illusion? And how do you create that illusion of being a good leader? Hmm. And the answer to that, I don't know yet. I'm writing this like right now. But I give myself a timeline on that. So like I'll have that written by the end of January, you know.
Talk to me about like, so we want to do a brain special on this for founders that are listening. This is unknown. This was unknown to me as well. You work with some of the wealthiest people in Ireland. Mm. You do private one-to-one sessions with them. What do they come to you for? Because I'm thinking of founders who are listening here today and I want to kind of give them some takeaways to go, right, okay, I listened to this pod with Keith and Gary. You know, I've taken away these couple of things. How can I improve my mindset? Because we talk about business, body and brain. We'll get to the body piece shortly. How do you work with them? Like when you go in and say, right, session one, here's what we're going to cover. Or do they come to you with a problem?
So they come to me with a problem nearly always. And I would say there's kind of a through line. And the through line with wealthy people is very often they have their body in check. Not always, but very often, like most of these leaders, dare I say it, they're wearing their whoop, which is good for a certain proportion of people. I don't wear one, but I can understand the benefits. So they're wearing their whoop to getting optimal sleep. They're intermittent fasting, which is good for you. They're very often these people have assistants. So, you know, they'll have, you know, a good diet because they'll eat what's provided by their assistants. Mm. So they're not having to grab for crappy snacks or whatever. So they'll very often have that in check. Where they're mostly lacking is relationships within the family, like not being present in the moment. So a lot of people, like nearly all of my clients, find it difficult to be present in the moment. So their relationships suffer. The more their business gets more successful, the more the relationships suffer.
Is that business pulling them away, Keith? Because this is something I think about a lot. So I've done, this will be episode, I think, 400. And one thing I see is that leaders will say it's almost like their trade-off. Oh, I'd love to spend more time with family, but I'd love to be a bit fitter. But is that a conscious trade-off? Or are they like addicts seeking the fix? Because I can't kind of square it in my head as to what's driving them.
Yeah, so I think with these business people, they get so caught up in the hustle, they forget what's really important. And it's interesting because I'm sure they're aware, but they just still get caught up in the hustle. And the problem is, interestingly, a lot of these people remind me a little bit of, what's that guy that did The Apprentice in the UK? Alan Sugar.
Alan Sugar.
So Alan Sugar, I believe, logs off at like 5 o'clock every day. Like he's pretty regimented about, right, about the fact that he doesn't work weekends. And he's spoken about that. He might not even work Fridays. I can't remember. But he's good at just like, okay, here's the time I'm working. Here's the time I'm, yeah, not working. And he seems to then be present with his family. The problem with these people is they do the 9 to 5. They tell everybody not to bother them. But then they still procrastinate over business when they're at home with their family. Mm-hmm. They're sitting down. They're playing Monopoly. They're not playing Monopoly with the kids. They're thinking of the business, thinking of the business, thinking of the business. And they're caught in that spiral loop of what's next, what's next, what's next. And for a lot of these people, it's an addiction.
That's what I'm curious on, you know? Because I've kind of come to that conclusion. But like, is that nature nurture, Keith? Is that, you know, people who have that tendency are drawn towards business and positions of leadership, or is that something that business foists upon them?
Yeah, I think it's more the fact that it's not forced upon them, that's for sure. So in other words, you know, these businesses that they've created could easily continue succeeding with them just having an umbrella overview on those businesses. They could easily take a step back. Mm. But they won't. They're control freaks, right? So they need to be in control the whole time. And very often then, by the way, it's not just thinking about the business and caught in that spiral loop. It's also like overthinking and overanalyzing everything in their life. And then overanalyzing the past and getting caught in that belief system that's stored in them from previous experiences, often very traumatic experiences. And my job very often is to unpack that. But then not all of them are healthy lifestyle-wise either. I said the majority or a lot of them are. But like a person came to me a number of years ago, about 2 years ago, and he came to me about just being a better communicator with his team. He wanted to learn about nonverbal communication tactics. And sometimes, by the way, like, sorry, a lot of the time people will come to me about how to negotiate better because they realize that I can negotiate and I can negotiate very well, very high-end deals. I'll give you an example of that in a minute. But these are people who know this about me. A lot of people don't know that about me. So,
God, like I'm getting the layers here today.
Well, for example, I restructured an office one time in Sweden, in an investment firm, and I explained to them why I was restructuring their office, because that's where the deals are getting done for hundreds of millions, and what they were doing wrong in the office. And ultimately, like as an example, I got them to put in a glass table instead of this kind of table into their office, so that when they're negotiating with whoever they're negotiating with, the lead person, so let's say there's three of you in from an investment firm and there's three of us, identify who the real decision maker is out of the three. The reason the glass table was there, and this is just one of, like, we'll just say 100 things that I taught them, it was to notice A, what the legs are doing underneath the table in your peripheral vision, but also if the legs are crossed, there's an artery that goes down the back of our leg. I always forget the name of the artery, but it's a big artery that goes down the back of our leg. So if the legs are crossed, there's a bounce of the upper leg. That bounce is not a tick. That's actually the person's resting heart rate. So if now I can actually measure that over a 15-second time period, because I can look at my watch, notice, like, just in my peripheral, well, I can do this while I'm talking. Notice my peripheral vision. The second, not in this watch, but if I have a watch that has a second hand, ultimately, over a 15-second period, I'll quickly, doesn't have to be exact, I'll quickly count the bounce. So whatever that bounce is, I'll times by 4, that's the person resting heart rate, right? So I know during the chit-chat period, when we're just talking about the weather or whatever it is, I know roughly their resting heart rate. So I'll know if it's whatever it is, like, you know, 60 beats or, you know, 50 beats per minute, whatever it is, right? And then during the course of a negotiation, if I've said something that's made that person feel uncomfortable and I see the bounce going faster, I know now that person's uncomfortable with what I've said. So if that's about price point, I know it's price point. If it's something that they've said to me, so if they've said something to me, like a sentence, whatever that sentence is, and I see the bounce rate going up, then I know they're potentially lying to me. Right, so it's all about micro expression analysis.
But you're getting a whole new wave of inbounds after this podcast. Yeah,
but it's the real stuff, right?
Keith Barry's going to be involved in every finance deal in Ireland in 2025.
Yeah, but it's the real stuff. So an example of how I use
that's interesting stuff, though, right? And that's the thing I think we forget in business. Like, people hire people, people sell to people.
Well, I always say this, right? If you get nothing else out of this podcast, there's two things. I always forget these two things. One is, who do you not want to be? It's a really powerful question.
Who do you not want to be?
I'll go back to that. Because then the other one, I forgot the other one now. Okay, so let's go into that, because I forgot what the other one was. The other one was relevant to the body language stuff. But ultimately, who do you not want to be? And the reason I say that is very often people, when they ask themselves, who do I not want to be? They're already there. They're already the person they don't want to be. So if you can define that, you can then move as quickly as you can away from that.
Do you mean traits like deceitful, dishonest, nervous?
No. I mean, so for example, who do you not want to be? I can tell you exactly who I don't want to be. I don't want to be three words, an absent father. Because I travel so much, it's very easy for me to get caught up in that rat race and become an absent father and not see my kids, not know my kids. And very often people end up there, right? I know loads of people who are divorced. They get to see their kids now every other weekend because they're divorced. So they ended up exactly where they don't want to be because of the rat race, because of business, and because they weren't mindful of who they don't want to be. So we all get caught up in what's our compelling future. But I think it's a very interesting prospect to define first who you don't want to be.
Anti-goals.
Yeah. Don't get too focused on those, because then you can go into the negativity of that. But very often, who do I not want to be? Well, I don't want to be a smoker. Well, are you a smoker? And if you are, is that the person you don't want to be? If that is the person you don't want to be, then stop smoking. Oh, it's too hard to stop smoking. No, it's not. Mm-hmm. Go to Tony Starr. He's 83. He's my mentor. He lives in Camatili. Sharp as a breeze. I meet him. Still does 10,000 steps every single day. Like, not a bother on him. Sharpest guy in the country. He's gotten tens of thousands of people off cigarettes. Go to him. Give up smoking. End of story. Right? So who do you not want to be? So I don't want to be an absent father. I think it's a really powerful question to ask yourself. You know, and then, like, I don't know what the other one was going to be, but, like, here's an interesting one. Like, I talked to this about all of these. Oh, yeah, that's what I was going to talk about. Like, is a guy came to me a number of years ago, and he came to me specifically to communicate with his employees more. But I noticed there's a rash on his neck here. And I said, well, before we start talking, and they're paying me for this advice. So my job is to be brutal, brutally honest. And I said, well, what's the rash on your neck before we talk about communication skills? And he said, well, it's a rash. You know, I've had it for a while. And I said, well, tell me about that. And then he said, well, it's all over my body. He said, sorry, all over your body? Yeah. And I said, okay, tell me more about that. And tell me about your diet. And tell me about, you know, the body, as you put it. And then he told me, like, he doesn't eat breakfast. So you might consider that, oh, that's a good thing. He's an intermittent faster. No, he gets up and has a cup of coffee with a couple of cigarettes. And then later on in the day, for lunch, he'll consider have what he considers a healthy lunch, but that healthy lunch would be a chicken roll from, you know, some spa or something, or center or whatever, you know what I mean? Okay, and then tell me about your dinner. Oh, I have a good hearty meal for dinner, you know, whatever, like bacon and cabbage or something. I said, okay, so your weight, you're about, you know, 80 kilos. You're probably about 160, 170 pounds. You should be getting 1.2 grams of protein per pound. You should be, you know, we'll just say at least minimum 180 grams of protein a day. You're getting about 30. I'll be generous here. You're getting 50. You haven't told me about some protein you're getting. So you're getting less than a third of your protein goal per day to add to your skeleton muscle, to add to longevity. You've got no vegetables in your diet. The carnivores out there will say that's a good thing. Like, that carnivore.
Was that totally alien information to him?
Yeah, no. Like, people know this stuff, but they pay no attention to it.
Yeah.
So I just said, let's forget about why you came here. Let's just deal with all that first. Turns out he was smoking like 40 or 60 cigarettes a day. It was really heavy smoker, you know? But then people are out there vaping, like some of the richest people in Ireland. But I look at it really funny. It
annoys the crap out of me. You're walking on the street and someone just vapes all in your face. You're like, that is absolutely
Yeah, but I find it really funny because people are vaping now like the dummy in their mouth for babies. People won't want to hear that. That are listening to this
podcast. It's ridiculous.
Like they've got the vape in their hand all day long. So it's not like a cigarette where they might have had a cigarette with their coffee and then 2 hours later they might have another cigarette. Like, we know that's bad for you. But people are vaping. They're just vaping all day long. So I look at it like honestly, I look at it like a baby with a dummy.
It is like a comforter. Like, you know, you see grown men with the big, long, cylindrical ones and they're... And you're like, man, that's just disgusting. But disgusting, number one, really bad for health, number two, and three, just
But they don't see
ridiculous.
It as really bad for their health, and this is the problems. But in 10 years' time... It's going to be looked at like smoking was, and we all can see the pattern. We can all see the pattern, right? So yeah, like, it's just intriguing to me, that whole space, you know?
So I'm conscious of your time. Talk to me then about, just leave us with some kind of like fundamentals for how founders should be, you know, minding their brain and growing their brain. Like, how should they be maintaining their brain? Because I'm very much having the balance across the business, the body and the brain. What should they be doing? Because people are familiar with like journaling, meditation. What should... When you deal with high-level founders, what are the fundamentals you get them to do?
Look, I'll go into it quickly. I've got a formula. I'm a scientist. My job is to take the complex and distill it down to something tangible that people can use. So I came up with this. Like, I could talk to you about the parasympathetic nervous system, sympathetic nervous system, the limbic system, yada, yada, yada. None of it matters unless I can get you to take action, right? So ultimately, I've done the research for people. I came up with this formula years ago. It's SW plus MA times SATT equals GS. And that covers the mind.
SW plus MA
times SATT equals GS. So your SW is your subconscious why. So I've got a unique way of helping people find and define their subconscious why. Very quickly, you just write down two words. Why what? Okay, I used to years ago limit people to why questions, but now I found that too limiting, so I allow them to ask what questions. So you're not allowed to ask any other question except why what. So, for example, I do this once every 2 months. So I did it recently. Why is it that I'm here in Rahway, New Jersey, giving a workshop on creativity? I like to provide value to other people. What is it about providing value to other people that benefits you, Keith? Oh, I get to gain back the asset. The asset's time. I'm always time crunched. Why is it that time is important to you? What is, and so every answer that comes up, you ask another question. But you keep going until you get a revelation. And everyone will get a revelation if you keep going. You will think of something you've never thought about in your life before.
So you just go level, level, level.
Yeah, keep going layer, layer, layer. So after 47 layers recently, what came up to me is I want to shut down all 32 raw sewage pipes pumping raw sewage into the seas around Ireland. That's my defined subconscious why. And everybody will tell me that that's an impossible problem to solve.
Did not think we were going there, but okay.
No, but everybody will tell me and has told me it's impossible to solve because it's a multi-billion euro problem, blah, blah, blah. So then I've given myself a timeline to do that. So I'm going to do what I'm doing now till I'm 55. Then at 55, I'm going to take a step back. That's why I need to do like the likes of Three Reen and all those places. Because at 55, I'm going to go full time into doing that. So that's my defined subconscious why. And it's very grandiose.
So give me that again. You want to shut down all the raw sewage pipes pumping into the sea?
Yeah.
Cool. Okay, there might be some people listening who that's their jam. So just to
yeah, but that's a very clarify. Grandiose vision. But I've got other micro purposes as well, micro subconscious wise. Like Simon Sinek very often will tell you, you can really only have kind of one purpose. I think you can have many.
Same. Yeah.
And
they'll change over time.
And, you know, Simon and other thought leaders, I think they're very good, but they very often talk about the conscious why. I'm more interested in your subconscious why because you're driven by your subconscious behaviors. So SWMA, massive action. I'm a big proponent of massive action. So, you know, we don't have too much time, but the body, for example, you know, with the body, I take massive action. I intermittent fast. I do ice baths every day or every other day if I'm too busy. Sauna, I've got a sauna and ice bath in my back garden.
Love it.
You know, I'm privileged to be in a position to be able to afford that. But before I could afford that, I just had a bucket in the back garden where I'd make my own ice and I'd jump into that. Before I had that, I just had cold showers, but I couldn't afford that. So there's no excuse, right?
There's levels. Yeah, always.
You know,
jump in the sea.
You don't need... Yeah.
Jump in the sea is free.
Yeah, like Saturday, I think it's like 15 quid, Greystones. I was there Saturday just gone.
Oh, yeah.
I was in the sauna. Yeah, so I do the barrel sauna. So I have no affiliation with them. I pay my way, right, like everybody else.
Not anymore.
I'm just giving them a kick. I'm just giving them a kick out, a shout out, because they're good, right?
So I live down there. Yeah.
Oh, do you? Yeah. So you know what I'm talking about. Yeah. So I do sauna, ice bath, and then we go over into the harbour and jump in the sea at the end.
Yeah, it's pretty.
And I was there in the middle of the storm the other day. I'm very safe in the sea because, you know, that harbour, it's very enclosed.
It's completely closed in. Yeah. It's very good.
So it's not dangerous.
Yeah.
I'm very respectful of the sea. But anyway, ultimately, there are things that you can do. I think the number one beneficial thing people can do for their health is to follow the Wim Hof method. Game changer for me in terms of inflammation, reducing inflammation in my body, overall mindset, Wim Hof method. Then for, you know, part of massive action, self-hypnosis. There's a lot of information on that in Sleep Hacks. If you're not interested in Sleep Hacks, Brain Hacks is my other book. Mm. A lot of information on that.
I'll link them both in the show notes as well.
And then with massive action, I tell people, delete off an app that, you know, is sucking down your time and does not serve you. So I've deleted off Sky News off my phone recently, as an example. I've deleted off Twitter.
Oh, a guilty pleasure, but okay.
No, oh no, but it's not a guilty pleasure. See, we think it is, right? But what's going into your brain can never be unseen. What goes into your brain can never be unpacked subconsciously, unless you know how. So then you might wake up anxious or depressed or whatever one day and you won't realize why, and you think your life is great and you don't understand why you're anxious or depressed. Very often it's from the information that you've absorbed through the news. So
I stopped a long time ago.
Yeah.
So, I do my weekends, I get the Financial Times and the Sunday Times, read them both.
Yeah, old school, right? Find out the news Saturday, Sunday if you want to.
That's enough.
People say to me, I need the news for my business. Great. Do you know what? You're a successful business person. Delegate to your assistant. Get him or her to report to you once a day.
Yes.
And okay. That's it. Get them to do the donkey work for you. You know.
You want to feel busy and people subsume themselves with that.
So massive action.
Massive action.
And then the SATT is the subconscious attitude, how to hack your subconscious mind. So again, I mentioned it earlier, self-hypnosis for that always for me is key. And then GS is guaranteed success. And all of my clients follow that formula. And anytime that they break down in one area, I just say, go back to the formula.
So funny. My next question for you. So my whole new thesis for next year, and we'll actually be rebranding as this, is the founder formula. Because I believe everyone's got their formula, but it's all different. Because I get the same question all the time. Gary, you've interviewed 300 people, founders. What do they all have in common? I was like, some things, but they're all different.
Yeah.
Because everyone wants that one thing. There's no one thing. You said it earlier perfectly. What works for you won't work for me.
Yeah. So meditation, some people love meditation, right? There's a lot to be said for meditation. I think it's a fantastic practice. I'm not inherently good at meditation.
Same.
Meditation is about being present in the moment, really, and just kind of forgetting everything and just being present.
The sauna is my meditation. Here. I go in there for 10 minutes and I just think, I do 2 minutes cold, back in for 10 minutes. And the difference in the first 10 and the second 10,
it's unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
But like my daughter last night, she got in the sauna and ice bath for the first time like ever. And she, if she sat here in front of you, she's 16, she will tell you the difference in her mindset afterwards. She got about six things done that she's been procrastinating about. And I don't want to be telling tales of my daughter because you know what they're like, the 16. So don't worry, I'm not saying anything. But she's got six things done that she's been procrastinating on, one of them for a year and a half.
Yeah.
And she got them all done immediately after the sauna ice bath. So, but for me, meditation is brilliant, but I prefer self-hypnosis with a creative visualization and heading towards my compelling future.
You know? We're going to do a quick fire round.
Yeah.
Very quick, so now you got to go.
Well, quickly, before you do that, look at me. Focus on something that you haven't focused on in ages. Focus on your PIN for your bank card. Okay?
Okay.
Now, this is important. You haven't told me earlier on what your PIN is for your bank, and nobody else knows this, correct?
I have to literally look at the keypad myself sometimes to remember.
Throw me over your pen and your paper for a second, right? Let's try this. Okay, look at me. Just focus. Put out your finger like this, but don't move it. Just imagine that you're moving it. Now, don't actually move it. In other words, don't give me any clues. Imagine you're in front of a bank machine and imagine that you're plugging in the first digit of your PIN. But don't move your finger. 0123456789. 0123456789. What's the first digit of your PIN? Be honest. 5. I wrote down a 5 as well. There it is there, right? So focus on... Okay, I'll tell you what. Let's do this a bit different.
I'm going to have to change my PIN now after this.
Well, only if I get it. So I don't know what it is yet, but you're going to tell me. Just you're going to tell me without speaking. Focus on this... tell you what. Forget about the second digit. So don't focus on the second digit. Now, here's what happens. Psychologically speaking, when you try not to focus on something, you focus on that, but then you also jump to the third digit, right? So I saw in your head you jumped to the third digit. And and the third digit is a 0. Is that correct? Yeah. Now, focus on 0. Focus on one of the two digits left. 0123456789666. There's a 6 in there somewhere. Is that correct? Be honest. Yes. Focus on where the 6 is. Focus on whether it's in the second position. Oh no, it's in the last position. Is that correct? Change your PIN number.
I'm literally going to have to change my PIN after.
What's
this,
your PIN? I've written something down. Go ahead.
5706.
5706. Got it. Bang on. Quick fire round, except don't ask me how I did it.
Well, that was fucking cool. quick fire round questions while I think.
Yeah, I'm probably getting clamped outside, so we better be quick here.
Enterprise Ireland helps to support and fund a vibrant startup ecosystem, providing supports, insights, and network connections to the most ambitious Irish startups. From expert advice to raising funding, exploring opportunities in international markets, to strategic planning, Enterprise Ireland is here to support you in those important startup moments. For more information about how Enterprise Ireland can support you on your startup journey, visit enterprise-ireland.com. Enterprise Ireland, helping Irish startups go global.
What book would you recommend every founder must read?
The Choice by Edith Eger. A lot of people will recommend a business book. I've read many business books. The Choice by Edith Eger. There's a lot to be learned for everybody in that. And it's about how the fact that regardless of circumstances, you always have a choice in how to respond and how to think. And it's by an amazing human being, Edith Eger, who is still alive to this very day on Instagram. And ultimately, she was in a Nazi concentration camp and she still believed that she had a choice of how to think, even in those dire circumstances. And I think we can apply that to our business lives as well.
That's incredible. You bring that up. This year, every year I kind of have a saying that I anchor on. This year was, that's a choice.
Yeah, there
that's
you go.
A choice. I say that all the time. That's a choice. What's something you learned the hard way?
Something I learned the hard way, don't trust everyone. It's as simple as that. Don't
That's
trust
it. It's a quick fire round.
I trusted in previous years. I trusted too many people and it bit me. So I do trust people, but I'm very mindful now of who I trust. I was too trustworthy years ago. So just be mindful of who you trust.
What have you sacrificed for your success?
I think I have sacrificed time. with, I'm mindful of my family, so I always spend enough time with my family. But I think time with friends. So I've missed out on time in years gone by with friends. And you know, I don't regret that, because that was in a period of time where I was really hustling hard. And I think that's necessary. But now I am mindful of that. So that's why I was in Greystones at the weekend with my best mate Al, in the sauna, in the ice bath, and then down the road to that. I've never learned the name of the place, but the coffee shop down on the harbour one, you know, where you walk
Fod's
down
Hill?
To it.
No.
It's in the middle of the apartments there. You know, halfway
the
down.
Scale, the bakery. Yeah,
oh my
scale,
God,
I think, isn't it?
That
yeah,
place.
Yeah. You like it?
It's like eating heroin down there. Like gone in straight away. I'm addicted, basically, you know. So yeah, Scale.
Rise at the Cove. Go down there the next time. It's absolutely brilliant. That's my favourite. It's my local. What would you do today if I give you 10 million euro?
I'd drop everything I'm doing, bring the family to Hawaii, set up a magic bar, and I perform close-up magic and just chill.
Finally, an honest answer. Oh,
I'd
this,
invest
I'd
in this.
That.
I hear these people on your podcast go, invest in this. Listen, if you ask me about investments, I'm probably the worst person. Money doesn't interest me. I'm driven by experience. Too many people are driven by money.
Mm.
And I am not driven by money. Money is necessary. I like money to just provide for my family and bring them on good holidays. But I'm not money orientated. So 10 million euro, yeah. I like the idea of going to Hawaii instead of a magic good. Bar and just chilling out.
I like that as well. What's something you believe other people would strongly disagree with or find weird?
They would disagree with my statement, which we don't have time to unpack. It's not okay to not be okay.
Okay.
They would disagree with that. And I'll give it some context.
Yeah.
It's a nuanced conversation, a deeper conversation to have. I think the concept of it's okay to not be okay has now been misconstrued. It's okay to sometimes not feel okay, for sure. It's okay to feel bad sometimes, that's for sure. But now I think we have an overwhelming level of people who are trapped because they feel like it's okay to not be okay. And it's not okay to not be okay. It's okay to know it's not okay to be not okay. You don't want to be not okay.
Yeah.
You don't want to be depressed all of your life. You don't want to be anxious all of your life. And it's not okay to be like that, because 99.999% of people, their DNA is okay. Their mindset is okay. They don't have a hormonal imbalance. It's other reasons that they're not feeling okay. And then the other percentage of people, of course, they need medication. Of course, they need professional help. But I think people need to understand it's not okay to not be okay. And a lot of people would disagree with that statement, but I'd stand behind it because I come from a good place saying that. I want people to know that you can heal, and you can heal fast, you can heal quick. Because I've helped people heal fast and heal quick. And then to know it's not okay to sit with that for the rest of your life, because you want to have a fruitful, positive and productive life.
Thank you for that answer. What's the one thing everyone should be doing for their body?
Breath work and ice baths.
What's the one thing?
Or cold therapy.
Probably related. What's the one thing everyone should be doing for their brain?
Probably the number one thing would be self-hypnosis, but separate from that, being mindful of gut health. So the gut-brain biome is going to be the next kind of hip thing that people are going to be talking about. It's already hip now, but it's going to become even more hip. So
I sense a new book.
Well, maybe, but like, yeah, so I eat fermented foods, a lot of fermented foods for my gut biome. I sprout. So in other words, I make my own sprouts, which have very high level of probiotics, prebiotics in them. And so on and so on. So, yeah, paying attention to your gut health and doing things for your gut.
What's your last bit of advice to everyone listening?
Two pieces. Something I learned a long time ago was the faster you fall behind, the more time you have to catch up. So it's okay to fall behind once you know you've got then time to catch up. And my final piece of advice is, if you're finding that you're failing, if you're finding that, you know, life's not going your way, the twists and turns are not coming your way, go into super activity mode just for a short period of time. So that is when I become an absent father for a set period of time, being mindful of the fact that I never want to land there. But if life's not going my way, super activity mode, and in that super activity mode, nothing is stopping me. So, like, nothing is stopping me. So being driven by my compelling future, so knowing what that is, and then taking that super activity mode to get there. If you go into that super activity mode for that short period of time, knowing what your compelling future is, then nothing will stop you. You'll become unstoppable.
You've given me my theme for 2025, super activity mode. I'm going to take that. Keith, new book? Out now?
Sleep Hacks. It's good stock and filler for this Christmas. And yeah, in all good bookstores.
And what else? Where can people, most importantly, reach you if they want to do some of the, like, the corporate work? Where can they reach you?
LinkedIn for the corporate work for your audience is probably best. It's really me on LinkedIn. I'm there every day, if not every second day, myself. And other than that, Instagram. And I'm just Keith Barry on both. So you'll find me on both.
Keith, that was a genuine pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Cheers. Change your pin.